Divine Grace. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Sagaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopinath Shyam Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Shri Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Shri Shri Navaritam Ki Jai. Shri Shri Mayapur Dham Ki Jai. Shri Shri Mathura Dham Ki Jai. Shri Shri Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai. Shri Shri Ayodhya Dham Ki Jai. Tulasi Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Ganga Maya Ki Jai. Jamuna Maya Ki Jai. Gaur Premanandi. Harinama Sankirtan Ki Jai. Shri Shri Brihat Mardanga Ki Jai. Transcendental Prasadam Distribution Ki Jai. Shri Shri Gornitai Ki Jai. Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Madana Mohana Ki Jai. Shama Veta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Nuhastanapura Dhamma Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutare Srimare Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauragani Prasadani Namaste Sasanyavari Prasthati Adeshi Tarane. Om Agyanati Miranda Syagarananjana Salakaya Chaksurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manuvistam Stafitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam. Reading from Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita by His Holiness Satsarup Das Goswami Maharaj from London, A Dream Fulfilled, Chapter 1 in Every Town and Village, London, A Dream Fulfilled. This is the missing microphone, returned and restored. The Hare Krishna mantra record was still high on the charts in England and throughout the continent. Continent meaning Europe. And this fame led a Dutch television company to invite Prabhupada's disciples to Amsterdam, all expenses paid, to do a show. They would have only 5 minutes of airtime, but Prabhupada accepted it. 5 minutes, he said, is sufficient. We will preach the whole philosophy of Krishna consciousness in 5 minutes. Prabhupada and his party took the ferry from Dover across the English Channel to France and then traveled by train to Amsterdam. It's not, I think that's a mistake. It was an airplane trip, actually. Anyway, the television studio located outside the city was in a modern air-conditioned building with constant loudspeaker announcements, artificial plants, and TV in every room, but no windows. The receptionist brought Prabhupada and his disciples to a windowless room with painted concrete walls. In India, Prabhupada said, we wouldn't consider living in a place without windows and fresh air. I want to sit by a window. So the devotees checked through the entire building until finally, in the third floor hallway, they found a window. Moving their chairs with them, they went with Prabhupada and sat by the window. By the year 2000, no one will see the light of day, Prabhupada said. Cities will be forced to live underground. They will have artificial light and food, but no sunlight. The producer of the program arrived, surprised to find that the Swami was also going to be part of the act. The surprise was a pleasant one, and he welcomed Prabhupada to his show. Now what I want you and your group to do, he explained, is to sing your record, Hare Krishna Mantra. You don't actually have to sing out loud. We're going to play your record, and you mime. Pretend you're playing those instruments. Pretend you're singing. He allowed that afterward Prabhupada could speak for 2 minutes. Just before Prabhupada and the devotees went on stage, they had to wait in the wings while a local Dutch group danced around, pretending to play their saxophones, trumpets, and drums. Then the producers brought in a table with a cushion on it for Prabhupada and seated the devotees around Prabhupada on the floor. The cameras began, the record played, and the devotees started to mime. Suddenly, clouds produced by dry ice rolled in on the set, a mystical effect. As the devotees disappeared under the clouds of carbon dioxide, only Prabhupada remained clearly visible. Seeing the special effect unsuccessful, the producer motioned the devotees to stand and dance beside the Swami. The song ended and a camera closed in on Prabhupada. "Now you have 2 minutes, Swamiji," the producer said. Prabhupada began, "We have been chanting this Hare Krishna mantra. This is a transcendental sound vibration, non-different from the Lord. The Lord's name and His form are the same. Please chant the sublime sound and your life will become perfect. You'll become happy and you'll realize your true nature, that you are an eternal servant of God, Krishna. This process is called Bhakti Yoga, and we request everyone to take to this chanting. Thank you very much." Prabhupada was pleased as his disciples' record continued to be a hit in Europe. The Hare Krishna record, this is a quote from a letter apparently, "The Hare Krishna record is selling very nicely. Yesterday it sold 5,000 copies, and this week it is on the chronological list as number 20. They say next week it will come to number 3, and after that it may come to number 1. So they are very much hopeful of this record. To Satsarup in Boston, Prabhupada wrote, "The Hare Krishna record is going on in England nicely, and I heard that in Australia it stands 4th and on the list of 50 important records." Hare Krishna mantra became the number one song in West Germany, number 1 in Czechoslovakia, and among the top 10 all over Europe and even in Japan. With the income from the record, the devotees began paying their bills and financing the renovation of the Berry Place temple. I'll stop there. Actually, I was there, and what happened, a little more detail, is when the group known as the Radha Krishna Temple with Prabhupada was asked to wait in the wings. There were seats, and there were dancers, go-go dancers, and they were gyrating, and they would stand on different levels. And so we had to stop and watch them. So Prabhupada exhibited his anger, and he looked at them, and he turned at us, and he said, "Just see, they're not even symmetrical," because they were kind of wiggling and gyrating in different directions. And when he was down in this basement area where there were no windows, he kept asking us to get to a place where there was some fresh air and windows. So they thought we were being very temperamental. And in one music publication that came out some weeks after that, they sarcastically referred to us, instead of as the Radha Krishna Temple, as the Radha Krishna Temperamental, because of that incident that took place in Amsterdam. But we did fly on a KLM, Royal Dutch Airline. That was one thing. And Prabhupada actually didn't like the engagement very much afterwards. He said, Gurudas had arranged it, he said we should be more careful when we accept engagements, because it seemed like it was a good thing to get a all-expense-paid trip, but actually they, because of the dry ice and the go-go dancers and everything, and the lack of air and windows, didn't think that we should have accepted it. And we thought about it afterwards and got a little bit on Gurudas's case for not finding out more about these engagements before we went to them. In other words, we could have gone probably without Prabhupada because he wasn't even on the record, but somehow in the excitement, there was this impetus for him to go. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskritam naram chaivam narottamam devim saraswatim vyasam nato jayam udirayat nasta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati utamashlokher bhakti bhavati naishtiki. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, translations and purports by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, 3rd canto, 32nd chapter, text number 39, and I'll read 40. Naitat Kalayopadishin. Shri Gauri Nitai, Shri Shri Ram Lakshman Hanuman, Shri Shri Radhamana Mohan Ki Jai. Navinitaya Karichit Na Stabdhaya Na Vinaya Naiva Dharma Vajayaya. Sorry, Dvajaya Cha Naitat Kalayopadishin. Naitat Kalayopadishin. Navinitaya Karichit. Navinitaya Karichit. Nastabdaya Nabinaya. Nastabdaya Nabinaya. Naiva dharma dvajaya cha. Naiva dharma dvajaya cha. Naitat kalayopadishin. Navinitaya karichit. Nastabdhaya nabhinnaya. Naiva dharma dvajaya cha. Naitat kalayopadeshen. Navinitaya karichit. Nastabdhaya nabhinnaya. Naiva dharma dvajaya cha. Naitat kalayopadeshen. Navinitaya karichit. Maharajis. Etat, this instruction, kalaya, to the envious, upadishe, one should teach, na, avinitaya, to the agnostic, karichit, ever, na, stabdhaya, to the proud, na, not. Vinaya. To the misbehaved. Na. Not. Eva. Certainly. Dharma Dvajaya to the hypocrites. Cha, also, translation by Srila Prabhupada. Lord Kapila continued, this instruction is not meant for the envious, nor for the agnostics, or for persons who are unclean in their behavior, nor is it for hypocrites, or for persons who are proud of material possessions. The next verse. Nalolu payo padishen na graharudda chetase na bhaktaya chame jatu namod bhakta dvisham api. I'll just read that word for words. Na means not. Lulupaya is to the greedy. Upadishet, one should instruct. Na, not. Griha arudha chetase, to one who is too attached to family life. Na, not. Abhaktaya, to the non-devotee. Cha, and. Me, me, of me. Jatu, ever. Na, not. Ma, my. Bhakta, devotees. Dvisham, to those who are envious of. Api, also. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. It is not to be instructed to persons who are too greedy and too attached to family life, nor to persons who are non-devotees and who are envious of the devotees and of their and of the personality of Godhead. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Persons who are always planning to do harm to other living entities are not eligible to understand Krishna consciousness and cannot enter into the realm of transcendental loving service to the Lord. Also, there are so-called disciples who become submissive to a spiritual master most artificially, with an ulterior motive. They also cannot understand what Krishna consciousness or devotional service is. Persons who, due to being initiated by another sect of religious faith, do not find devotional service as the common platform for approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead also cannot understand Krishna consciousness. We have experienced that some students come to join us, but because of being biased in some particular type of faith, they leave our camp and become lost in the wilderness. Actually, Krishna consciousness is not a sectarian religious faith. It is a teaching process for understanding the Supreme Lord and our relationship with Him. Anyone can join this movement without prejudice, but unfortunately there are persons who feel differently. It is better, therefore, not to instruct the science of Krishna consciousness to such persons. Generally, materialistic persons are after some name, fame, and material gain. So if someone takes to Krishna consciousness for these reasons, he will never be able to understand this philosophy. Such persons take to religious principles as a social decoration. They admit themselves into some cultural institution for the sake of name only, especially in this age. Such persons also cannot understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Even if one is not greedy for material possessions but is too attached to family life, he also cannot understand Krishna consciousness. Superficially, such persons are not very greedy for material possessions, but they are too attached to wife, children, and family improvement. When a person is not contaminated by the above-mentioned faults, yet at the ultimate issue is not interested in the service of the personality of Godhead, or if he is a non-devotee, he also cannot understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Om Ajnanti Miranda Sagana Nanjana Salakaya Chaksurun Malitam Jaina Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. So sometimes it is said that the path of bhakti or Krishna consciousness is like a razor's edge. On the one hand, it entails basically singing, dancing, glorifying the Lord, and feasting. But on the other hand, Prabhupada has given many reasons why, as he says, someone does not understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So the philosophy, on one hand, seems rather simple, that I'm not the body, I'm a spirit soul, I'm eternally a part and parcel of Krishna, I have a relationship with Krishna as a servant, and if I chant the mantra, follow the regulative principles, that's the sum and substance of Krishna consciousness. But Prabhupada is indicating or intimating here that even if one does all these things, it's possible that someone still may not actually understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And he gives some examples. One example is just having ulterior motives, to want to use Krishna consciousness to improve one's material situation. That's one example. Another example is that someone becomes very wants to progress in Krishna consciousness, becomes very attached to what's called family improvement. There's Many religions, some are so-called successful today, and their basic promotion is that one can be family forever and ever, and in heaven and every place else. So that's another type of impure devotional service, in which God is not the center of life, but is a decoration to enhance the quality of an ulterior motive, to enhance a particular material situation. And that is very prominent today. Prabhupada mentions, particularly in this age, it's very difficult for people to understand. Here he says, they admit themselves into some cultural institution for the sake of name only, especially in this age. So it's very common. Once I was giving a talk in a high school, and someone started asking me about Sai Baba. Well, I wasn't really thinking very clearly, and I started to say things that I knew about Sai Baba. And it turned out that this student's parents were very involved with Sai Baba. So I kind of learned a lesson that one shouldn't make what are called ad hominem attacks, to directly attack people, but attack, if we have to, attack anything, the principles that are wrong. So here Prabhupada is attacking the principles that are wrong and saying people become attached. They say, oh, I'm a disciple of this one or that one, or I belong to this yoga club or that yoga club or this society. And this is all for some sake of identification. But pure devotional service is an extremely rare thing. And even within devotional service, so that out of thousands of people, only one comes to me, and out of those ones who come to me, only thousands actually know me in truth. That indicates that to actually understand the inner meaning of Krishna consciousness, to really understand in depth the philosophy, is not really such an easy thing. Not so easy. Even when one enters into the spiritual atmosphere of a temple, it is not so easy. And one of the most commonly, I think, misunderstood things is the way that devotees see others. I was on a radio program in Los Angeles, Religion on the Line, I think it was called, something about religion. And there was a rabbi and a Catholic priest and an Anglican priest. And it was one of these 2 or 3 hour things where people phone in, and it went to about 6 or 7 states. It took 2 years to get on this program, so I was trying to get me on it. And the question for the day was, does your religion allow you to hate people like serial killers? Serial killers are murderers who kill several people in a row. Maybe they rape a bunch of women and kill them all, or men, whatever. But this was particularly the question. Are you allowed to actually hate such persons? Can you have those feelings of hatred? So it was a very interesting discussion. And I tried to get the idea across, like saintliness, and try to explain what it was. I tried to explain how Prahlad Maharaj and other saintly persons didn't see the world in terms of friends and enemies. I also tried to explain how a person became devotional, that all their sins could be not only forgiven, but they could be considered saintly persons. So I was getting looks, you know, looking, what do they call it? Look, when you look askance? Or, huh? Just kind of, yeah, a little bit condescending, or, you know, not understanding, or where are you coming from kind of looks from the other people. It sounded very simplistic, I think, that, you know, we can just, hey, Christ taught this, you know, you should forgive everyone. See everyone as your brother, as yourself. See your brother as your, I mean, that's the teaching. But somehow they thought this was too simplistic, that, you know, it was, the world is more complex than that, and if a person's really bad, then, you know, you have a right to at least dislike them, if not hate them. Anyway, it was a very interesting discussion, and it made me think about how we are devotees, that we're supposed to see things. And it's very difficult sometimes when we're living in a very tight spiritual environment to see that the guy eating meat down the block is a devotee underneath. Or that the people who are, you know, very attached to their affluence are somehow devotees underneath all this. So Prabhupada talks about being a devotee here in the ultimate issue, and not instructing persons who are envious or they're trying to cause harm to other living entities. It's actually very rare a person who's trying to cause harm to other living entities who's regularly doing that. Most people we know, you know, they're not really out to cause harm to other people. But there are some who do. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 11th canto, it is stated that, and I'll read a quote from the Majjhima Lila in which Prabhupada quotes this verse, Ishvara tadadineshu balisheshu dvishatsu chat. Prema maitre kapropekya yakaroti samajama. It's an explanation of what one should do as a devotee and how one should see things. Another way that, well, there's another incident that this reminded me of. We were on a walk with Prabhupada, and one of the sannyasis was complaining about the neighbors. One of the neighbors had a plot of about 4 acres of land that we appropriated when we took on this land. But according to the laws in England, if you acquire some land, even though it goes in your name, if a farmer has rights to farm on that land, he can continue to farm on that land even though he doesn't own it. So anyway, during the walk, one of the sannyasis was characterizing this man as a demon, and some other neighbors that were objecting to the road going by their village. And Prabhupada was just silent, listening. And then he stopped and he turned to this sannyasi and he said, "But don't you become demon." And it startled everybody, you know, like everyone was sort of stopped walking. And we started to think, well, what is the difference between us and the guy and the farmer? And, you know, could he, maybe he could become a devotee. And actually some of these people in that village who were making the complaints and cost us millions of dollars and 10 years of fighting, they came to plant trees along the road when it was built. And they had a completely change of heart. I read some of the letters they wrote, because they got to know the devotees. So it was interesting, because it made us, I think Nudum was referring to this the other day, how we think we're so great, and he was talking about the little bug, and you know how insignificant we are, and we think that we're devotees, and yet, in one sense, you know, we could just be that far away from being demons, or you know, could lose our Krishna consciousness by slipping. And in rare cases, we've actually seen that happen, where someone who's even a personal servant of Prabhupada became somehow or other lost in their Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada even wrote one letter about it. So it was so bad that he wrote one letter about one of his servants that he said he'd become an envious snake and you should avoid him. And that's a very rare thing. But it also shows how the razor's edge principle or the tightrope principle is in existence. You know, Maya is always sort of encroaching upon our lives and making the very safe haven of Krishna consciousness very tottering. So one has to be very careful. In general, people adopt some religious belief or some yoga system or religion in order to get some prestige. Either they say, well, my religion's good because it's doing so much good to people, it's providing security and jobs, or they, you know, want to be a part of some yogi or school or something to say that I'm a member of the Neptune Society or you know, whatever it is. We've met every once in a while some famous people who pride themselves in belonging to some really obscure society. Maybe it's religious, maybe it's political, maybe it's philosophical. But again, even if it's religious, it's mainly done for having some sense of belonging to something and for name, fame, further name and fame and prestige. So I'm going to read this verse from the Chaitanya Chaitamrita in which Prabhupada talks about the pure chanting of Krishna consciousness and some of the pitfalls along the way. And he talks about what a Majjhima Adhikari is. This is in the chapter in which he's asking Nityananda to go and preach in Bengal and leave his presence. And Prabhupada is talking about how one can, if one is empowered by the Supreme Lord, one can perform very, very difficult tasks. Krishna nama narantara yannara varane se vaishnavi shrestha bhaja tanhara charane. A person who is always chanting the name of the Lord is to be considered a first-class Vaishnava, and your duty is to serve his lotus feet. These are now the residents of Kulinagram, speaking to Lord Chaitanya, just after he's instructed Lord Nityananda. Purport. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that any Vaishnava who is constantly chanting the holy name of the Lord should be considered to have attained the second platform of Vaishnavism. Such a devotee is superior to a neophyte who has just learned to chant the holy name of the Lord. A neophyte devotee simply tries to chant the holy name, whereas the advanced devotee is accustomed to chanting and takes pleasure in it. Such an advanced devotee is called Majjhima Bhagavat, which indicates that he has attained the intermediate stage between the neophyte and the perfect devotee. Certainly a devotee in the intermediate stage becomes a preacher. A neophyte devotee, an ordinary person, should worship the Majjhima Bhagavata, who is a via medium. In his Upadeshamrita, Srila Rupa Goswami says, Pratibhish cha bhajantam isham. This means that the Majjhima Adhikari devotees should exchange obeisances between themselves. The word Nirantara, meaning without cessation, continuously, constantly, is very important in this verse. The word antara means interval. If one has desires other than a desire to perform devotional service, in other words, if sometimes someone is engaged in devotional service but sometimes strives for sense gratification, his service will be interrupted. A pure devotee should therefore have no other desire than to serve Krishna. He should be above fruitive activity and speculative knowledge. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu it is said, Anya bilashita sunyam jnana karma jnabritam anukalyena krishna anushilanam bhaktir uttama. This is the platform of pure devotional service. One should not be motivated by fruitive activity or mental speculation, but should simply serve Krishna favorably. That is first-class devotion. So we were talking the other day, and we heard also Prabhupada speak about ruchi, or eagerness. And one of the verses we were reading today, the word loila came up. I remember that's another word. Sometimes it means greedy. And on the material platform, it is considered an impediment, devotional service. Chaloilam. Loilam means greedy for mundane achievements. But one can also be very eager, have loilam or ruchi or utsahan for spiritual advancement. And that is when one comes to the stage of sabai pum samparo dharma yakti bhakti arhoksajaya. And in this state, the devotional service that one experiences, ahoitiki apratiyata, is unmotivated and uninterrupted. These are two of the principles of pure devotional service. We see there is no interruption. No interruption means that there's not a period where we have sort of a downtime or off days, as is very common. As I was saying, someone asked Prabhupada about that, and he said, no, it's because I'm very strict about everything and following all the principles of devotional service. So that's actually the case, and that's why people are very attracted to devotees. I've met many people who saw a devotee once, and sometimes they talked to him, sometimes they didn't, and the overall feeling was, here's a person who is happy. Or another thing that attracts people to devotees is that they work very hard. We saw how hard Prabhupada worked, and we were dumbfounded, really, to think that while he was meeting with us, having darshan, with the deities, or just meeting in his room, we'd have his darshan, and he would be speaking to important people. He'd be writing 10 to 15 or 20 letters a day, and he would be strategizing, making plans for how to preach in a particular area. He would be carefully guiding disciples, and all the time, all the while, he was thinking of maybe 10 or 20 different places and writing letters, giving very crucial instructions about legal and financial and purchasing, maintenance, management, people's difficulties and their health, and all this stuff was going on, and it was actually inconceivable that he was so indefatigable in his activity. He would never stop. And like I said, when he would walk, we'd have to run to keep up with him. So that was the mood that he attempted to empower his disciples and followers to adopt, that there should be no interruption in devotional service. That if I have to take a vacation, it's only because, you know, I worked 3 days without sleeping and I sort of turned myself inside out and then I crashed for 40 hours or something. But that was the mood that he set, at least for devotees who are, you know, living in the temple. That's the mood. And that is what has actually inspired many people. not just the happiness, but the ability to achieve things by hard work. As we know, nothing comes easy, even in spiritual life. And I remember Prabhupada once embraced Bhakti Tirtha Swami because he had been preaching in the Eastern Bloc countries, distributing books, and sometimes having to go to jail and not know if he would ever get out of jail, and really entering many life-threatening, life-risking situations, one after the other, after the other. So even though it was not easy, I mean, in one sense, even though I could say it was easy to please Prabhupada, he was happy if anyone just made an attempt. But if someone went the extra distance, he was extra pleased. He was more pleased. And that's what Prabhupada's expecting those who are the core sort of, you know, temple dwellers to do, to go that extra distance and to help make that difference. Not that everyone doesn't work together to make a difference, but Prabhupada said once that Krishna consciousness is not a place for lazy fellows, and easy life and Krishna consciousness do not go well together. So particularly in ashrams, that is meant to be the case. So that's hoitiki apritiyata, Krishna consciousness. There's no other motivation. I'm not just here biding my time so that I can get my PhD or something like that. But living in the temple means it's a particular kind of austerity. And it's an example for thousands of people who come and expect a little bit of extra distance to be achieved, working a little bit extra hard so that they can become inspired. And maybe that one of their children might someday, if they're really tuned in, might give one of their sons to the ashram. It happens in India. Isn't that what your parents did? always engaged in sense. At age 11. So that happens, but it's very, very rare. And you wouldn't see it happen, really, hardly anywhere else in any other country. So Prabhupada continues, this Anyabilasi Dasunyam is the platform of pure devotional service. One should not be motivated by fruitive activity or mental speculation, but should simply serve favorably. That is first-class devotion. Then he describes the meaning of antara. It means this body. This body is an impediment to self-realization because it is always engaged in sense gratification. Antara also means money. If money is not used in Krishna's service, it is an impediment. Antara also means janata, or people in general. The association of ordinary persons may destroy the principles of devotional service. Similarly, antara may mean greed to acquire more money or enjoy more sense gratification. Finally, antara means atheistic ideas by which one considers the temple deity to be made of stone, wood, or gold. All these are impediments. The deity in the temple is not material. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself. Similarly, considering the spiritual master an ordinary person, Guru Shunaramati, is also an impediment. Nor should one consider a Vaishnava a member of a particular caste or nation. Nor should a Vaishnava be considered material. Charanamrita should not be considered ordinary drinking water, and the holy name of the Lord should not be considered an ordinary sound vibration. Nor should one look on Lord Krishna as an ordinary human being, for he is the origin of all Vishnu tattvas. Nor should one regard the Supreme Lord as a demigod. Intermingling the spiritual path with the material causes one to look on transcendence as material and mundane as spiritual. This is all due to a poor fund of knowledge. One should not consider Lord Vishnu and things related to him as being different. All this is offensive. In the Bhakti Sandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami explains this further. The Mayavadis look on Vishnu and Vaishnavas imperfectly due to their poor fund of knowledge, and this is condemned in Srimad Bhagavatam. The intermediate Vaishnava is described, and then he quotes the verse, Ishvara Tadadineshu. The intermediate devotee, Vaishnava, has to love God, make friends with the devotees, instruct the innocent, and reject jealous people. These are the four functions of the Vaishnava in the intermediate stage. So it's very, very rare that we encounter a jealous person. Most people, the Majjhima Adhikari, we are to see as Majjhima Adhikaris, as innocent. And only a very rare person who is violent against devotees or is speaking hateful words against the devotees or destroying devotees' property or attacking devotees or working to harm other living entities or over a long period of time maybe still maintains an inimical attitude is a jealous person and needs to be avoided. So, Balisheshu Dvishatsuchat, instruct the innocent people. So everyone in one sense is innocent, or at least as Majjhima Adhikaris, we are supposed to come to that platform of Majjhima Adhikari and see everybody as innocent people. This is the intermediate stage of devotional service that we strive for. And Prabhupada also said, even though he was on the Paramhansa stage, that he came to the Majjhima Adhikari stage in order to preach. And therefore, his life was spent preaching. And even though he didn't have to follow regular principles as a Paramahansa, he followed them in order to teach. So his whole life was dedicated to teaching what is a Majjhima Adhikari. And that even if one is on the Paramahansa platform, that because we are a Gostyanandi movement, a movement which is dedicated to preaching, then that is the thing which he came to teach us, how to preach, how to make plans to expand Krishna consciousness. And therefore he came to this material world to perform a particular duty. And all of the great Paramahansas throughout all history, including Lord Chaitanya and Lord Krishna, while they were here on earth, they were so incensed about the miseries of this material world, so imbued with love for the fallen souls, and so dedicated to giving their every last breath to elevating the conditioned souls, that they have set a standard. When we talk about Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu, and we look at the great predecessors, what they have done, They have given everything, every last ounce of energy to somehow or other, whether it's been through books or prasadam or through teaching or through lectures or through books or whatever it may have been. They've given every ounce of energy to try to get as many of the conditioned souls to come back with them, back to the spiritual world. That's been their mission. So we'll stop there. Any comments or questions?
I've heard often raised the in some circles the doubt or the criticism of the devotees that the practice of austerity, and especially as we practice the very strict has been practiced, and as we try to establish a very strict following of certain sadhana and strong encouragement to perform lots of work with that, that is at the time of practice is a kind of cruelty almost in the experience, mm-hmm. and that in the final result is also bad because it leads to a swing in the other direction of excessive sense indulgence.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your...
So the question is that sometimes we may be accused of being cruel because of the severe Spartan type of life we live and the austerities we perform and the hard work we're doing.
People say that the austerities are bad, that the dharma is bad because it's when you enforce it, it's cruelty, and in the end it has a bad result because people just want more sense gratification than before.
Yeah. And on the other hand, if there's too much sense gratification, everything is lost that way. So there's a kind of philosophy. As I was saying before, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is easy to understand because it's got some real basic tenets. But on the other hand, it's not so easy to understand because, for example, just the most basic first thing, like, who am I? Which Sanatana Goswami asked, and the answer being aham brahmasmi, that I'm spirit, that I'm not the body, is something that we all believe to be true. But how many of us are actually able to realize it at every moment? And the level to which we actually realize something is the indication of whether we really understand something or not. And I doubt that anyone here can say that I know all the time, I remember every second of my existence, of my waking hours, what to speak of sleeping hours, that I'm not this body, that I'm a spirit soul. We don't, because we get hungry, you know, and we have to eat. And, you know, we become, that's something we never forget to do. That's one of the regulative principles that we don't seem to forget. You know, we can forget maybe coming to the Mangal Arati, or forget going to Guru Puja or Didi Darshan or chanting our rounds. That's hard to remember to do every day. But to remember to eat, never a problem. So what does that mean? I'm my body. My tongue is crying out. My mind is crying out for that beautiful pizza that I'm envisioning up in the clouds there somewhere. So there's another kind of philosophy also that's going around, that has been going around. We call it the New Age philosophy. And that is, if it feels good, do it. And it translates in a perverted way into the Krishna consciousness environment, my thinking, I've got to get next to my feelings. I've got to be honest with myself. Well, that was what Arjuna said. Now I've got to be honest. I don't want to fight these people. I don't want to ruin the family. I don't want to ruin the nation. And I just don't, you know, my mouth's drying up. I don't feel like it. You know, I'm out of here. I'm not fighting. And, you know, family, it means family attachment. So that was a symbol, an instruction that we read every day, that book. And he was being honest. He was getting next to his feelings, so to speak. So this is a kind of refutation of that kind of philosophy. The real honesty was to see what Krishna wanted. And as we were hearing the other day, surrender means to do what Krishna wants. That is honesty. Anything else is dishonesty. If we don't really want to do what Krishna wants to do, or what his followers instruct us to do, that's dishonest. So that kind of philosophy is going around. We have to get next to our feelings and, you know, be honest. So there was a famous letter that Prabhupada wrote to Dhananjaya about what a temple is. And it's in the folio. I was just reading it again the other day. He says that we may be accused of being a military camp. These are Prabhupada's words. And we'll give people, you know, then he said, if someone isn't ready to live in a temple, they should come when they can and serve do some service to the deity or do some service for the devotees and get a benefit from the atmosphere. And we like that. We want many, many people to come to the temple. But if we live in the temple, he said in that letter, we have to be very rigid and rigorous in our behavior and more austere than those who live outside. And he said that we have to not only do it ourselves, we have to make sure that everyone else is doing it. And he said if people do not do it, they may be given one chance, two chances, but more than that, they may be asked to leave. So this was a very controversial letter when it came, because some people were actually asked to leave the temple. Then this letter was written, and it came back as the answer that yes, if you are going to live in a temple, you have to be strict. And it may be seen as draconian or cruel or unrealistic to someone who lives in a house and has a job and has children to raise and who's not understanding or appreciating why and how these austerities are undertaken. But nonetheless, they are, in one sense, the essence of the philosophy. Because if one is enthusiastic to undergo austerities, then a person becomes happy and enthusiastic. So by enthusiastic, I mean, enthusiasm means like you're running to the Srimad Bhagavatam class. You're opening your notebook and you're writing down the things that mean something to you. That's enthusiasm. You're jumping and chanting in front of the deities. You don't think of the deity as a kulagraha or a rock around the neck, a big stone, but you think of him as Krishna looking at me in a darshan. And you think of going out to chant in the streets and to distribute books and prasadam. And you just can't wait to do it. That's enthusiasm. And when that happens, we're so much thinking about how other people can be benefited by Krishna consciousness that we don't think of it as cruel or austere or difficult or time I could be doing, you know, eating a pizza or, you know, whatever my particular brand of sense gratification is. I could be surfing or out on a sailboat somewhere on Puget Sound in the summer. And we actually enjoy these things more. And it's this point at which Krishna consciousness becomes very, very enjoyable. And one attains Brahma Sukhyam, one attains happiness. Prabhupada said once that our spiritual life could be measured by how jolly we are. Anyone who's not looking jolly, they're in trouble. They're in big trouble. And the jolliness comes from being voluntarily austere. That's real happiness. So Prabhupada once said Krishna consciousness is a system of recreation. So for those who appreciate and love, I mean, I used to remember when I was younger, I used to just love taking a cold shower. We used to chant and sing in an ice cold shower, even in London where the room was colder than it was outside. And it's actually enjoyable. It really is enjoyable. But, you know, again, one has to get into that mode of enjoyment. It's spiritual enjoyment. Yes? About one at a time.
Regarding Madhava Pandit and Guru Maharaj, you just confirmed what you said the other day, that there are definitely spiritual solutions for volunteer problems. One of the things that comes to mind with his question is that one of the major problems, one of the many problems in America is people being overweight. A recent statistic I heard was something like 60-70% of the Americans are overweight. And one of the problems in solving, one of the problems which makes it difficult to solve this is that many people are into the binging fasting cycle. So when these people you're referring to, Madhava Pandit Prabhu, that they look at devotees' austerities and they criticize because they feel it results in extreme sense gratification. It's the same cycle psychologically. Someone who fasts loses 10 pounds fat and then usually, if not properly guided, they will immediately gain that plus more. Just like the smoking cycle.
Is this a question or a commentary?
So the comment is that could be where they're coming from, the observers, and what you said was very nice.
So overweight, over budget, and...
Or over, devotees who over I mean, people who think that devotees are not voluntarily doing the austerities might think in a wrong way that could be the result. But the second comment, if I may, you had mentioned about your TV radio show in Los Angeles, and your answers were so wonderful. And if the people weren't shocked by it, if they would have pursued it, you had taught us years ago during the trouble in this time, the different cases that came to the courts, that on a practical side, that we're not being idealistic, just saying that we're not going to hate people because our philosophy says just repeating what you said, our philosophy says that we should see everyone equally. And then the second thing was that we don't hate because
person can become cured and saintly.
The saintliness aspect. But you also said that if a person does commit murder, that it's to their advantage if they receive punishment in this life because they won't get it in karma, in the form of karma. And then secondly, we are not in a position to make those statements, the courts are, but ISKCON's platform is to not think we're above the law. So I thought maybe you want to comment on that, just to add to that. The radio show, the part that you had mentioned, because of the audience,
well,
is part of the answer.
It's Vedic philosophy that and it's according to the Manusamhita that if a murderer is executed, then it's beneficial because then he's relieved of the pain in the next birth. If that's what you wanted me to comment on.
Well, basically, that when you do a radio show like that, you said the people were shocked by your answer. If they weren't shocked by your answer, would you have gone public to make a statement like that, that ISKCON isn't saying that we...
Oh, I've said that. I've said that on Good Morning America once, that ISKCON's not above the law. But we know that Dharmantu Saksat Bhagavat Prahitam, the Bhagavatam says that there is the highest order of law in the universe. And there's public and there's private. Although sadhu has no private life. But Prabhupada said once when he was questioned about Christianity, where, you know, what is the ultimate and, you know, are there seva aparadhas? And he said that, you know, we don't distribute all these tapes to everyone in the world. We don't, you know, he even said that we should be very careful about distributing some of my letters. And he you know, intimated that, you know, not every letter that he wrote should be publicly aired. So there's a difference sometimes. There's a difference. You know, you sometimes you talk to your friend and you say, this is, you know, you just want to reveal your mind to someone. But in general, because the good behavior is something that is found in the lives of the Brahmins and the Vaishnavas, it is always found in there. And then the laws, although they're deteriorating more and more, they sanction things like abortion, but generally, like politicians, they know that people are not supposed to use drugs, they're not supposed to drink, or, you know, they think, at least not excessively. So they look upon us as being people, when they get to know us, who can do their job for them. Not for them, but can execute some of the principles that they're trying to enforce or legislate. So anyway, this whole process, the whole material world is like a prison house. It's like a reformatory. So we go into the prisons, we try to reform people, and if a person, even though he be the greatest offender, we can completely forgive him. Maybe he still has to do out his 20 years or whatever, or lifetime, or 10 lifetime sentences or whatever he has to do, or get executed. But according to the higher order laws of the universe, he can be considered a saintly person. But the answer was that we can love anybody. We don't see in terms of friends and enemies, and we don't think anyone should, mainly because everyone has a potential. Every person has potential, even if they have to spend some time in hellish planetary systems. That's also a reformatory system. So anyone can be elevated to the topmost position. Jagai and Madai are described in some of the Goswami literature as thieves and murderers. They weren't just you know, bad guys that were reveling and drinking and womanizing. They were described as thieves and murderers. Pretty bad. Okay, one more, maybe. Sometimes it's...
Yeah, it goes away.
Goes away, yeah.
Yeah, it's very enthusiastic at the beginning, maybe. But then sometimes it just goes away. So what was that enthusiasm? Was it this, you know, because would it, if it, real enthusiasm wouldn't stay, or how can you do this?
Yeah. Our Krishna consciousness is very flickering in the beginning. It comes and it goes. And you can be, you can be liberated while chanting Hare Krishna, and then after the chanting is over, be thinking about a nice cruise out to Atlanta or something, you know, that's not related to Krishna consciousness. So therefore, there's different stages that one goes through in Krishna consciousness that are described in the Madhurya Kadambini, for example, by Vishnu Thakavarti, and it says that we have to start out by having faith in the process. Then you associate with devotees, you begin the process of devotional service, you gradually burn away your offenses, and then you become steady, gradually steady, and then you become filled with love of Godhead, then you become like ecstatic all the time. So you have to go through these stages of clearing out all the different, the sinful desires and the offenses to realize this stage of mamchayo vicharane, steadiness in Krishna consciousness. So it takes time, definitely. Doesn't mean that it wasn't genuine in the beginning, but because there are certain desires that are resident in the mind, and they're still incubating or they're just resting there, it won't be constant. It'll just be a recurrent phenomena. The experience was Krishna conscious, but you know, because there's still some inhibiting factors in there, it didn't remain.
So is it completely experiencing Krishna consciousness?
And yeah.
And then goes out of Krishna consciousness and
yeah, goes in and goes out, comes back and goes in and goes out.
So what exactly do you mean by Krishna conscious? Seeing Krishna?
Well, we can say, what do we mean by pure devotional service or pure Krishna consciousness? Seeing Krishna at every moment, or not having any moment of lack of enthusiasm or feeling down. But Prabhupada also used the word pure devotee to describe his own disciples. That anyone who's on the path, like this verse we were talking about, 9:30, Abhichet Sudaracharo, if one is on the path of Krishna consciousness, whatever he may have done, we consider him saintly. So we consider all devotees who are here as pure devotees in the sense that they've all sacrificed so much to come here, to live in this situation, which is austere by materialistic standards, which is a big sacrifice to become an outpost, a resident of a dham, of a holy place. We consider everyone like that to be saintly. But because we still aren't 100% cured, we might only be 30 or 50 or whatever percent cured of all material contamination, we still have some residual pulling from karma. But we consider that everyone is on the path of pure devotional service, and that everyone is getting is who is undergoing the cure, unless they don't want to be cured, will get cured. So it's a system, really, that we're in. We're in a spiritual system for awakening our Krishna consciousness. And it's fully awakened at 1 minute, and then, you know, next minute it's not awake. But if we stay with it, then we can gradually come to the always awakened stage. It's like, you know, you don't have to close your eyes. But because of forgetfulness and imperfect attachment, or shadow attachment, it's sometimes called, we have the phenomenon, we experience the phenomenon of downs. So, you know, we have to look at the whole cumulative progression. If it's a chart, you know, there, if ideally the graph would go like this, it would be a geometric progression when we're starting out, like it goes, you know, it's like straight up in a curve. But it's more like it's kind of going this way, slowly. And even within that slowly, it's got crests and troughs. It's going up and down. But if we look at the whole thing over a period of time, for most people, even though there's crests and troughs, it's following an upward trajectory. Not so much maybe geometric, but at least, what do they call it, arithmetic? It's going, you know, up maybe only 4 or 5 degrees from horizontal, but it's going up. The main thing is to stay with it, to hang on to it. And now we were also talking about, you know, how instructions may sometimes become cruel, and, you know, sometimes it seems it's like going to be inconvenient. Like we were saying that there's going to be some construction work here for a month or so, or maybe 2 months, maybe longer. But we don't see that is some cruel thing. That we see it as an improvement. That this is going to happen so that we can better serve the deity. We can better cook for the deity. We can better perform our service for the deity. So we see, instead of this laborious thing we have to walk around, or we have to live, we have to, you know, be in a cramped condition, we see this as a wonderful thing that's going on. Not as some cruel imposition that's been imposed upon us, but something actually very progressive and wonderful. So all the instructions that we get about Krishna consciousness are ideally with the end in mind to build something that will last, to be here for what we call in America the long haul. That's what we're here for. This lifetime's not going to be so short in one sense. So, and you know, we have this whole life, we may have to do a few others to become Krishna conscious, but we're actually here to experience that and to undergo whatever hardships Krishna may throw in our way. Like we were hearing Queen Kunti was praying, you know, give me more of this because it helps me remember you. So even those apparent reverses or hardships, those actually, as we look back at them, and even as we see them in present time, they're actually instances that inspire us to go deeper into Krishna consciousness, because Krishna is testing us. Everything that happens, that there's an apparent reverse or difficulty or subtraction from material life, is actually a test, and we're either going to pass or fail, or, you know, we'll get maybe a certain number of points out of it. Might get 1%, but we have to see them that way. All the Pandavas and Kunti and they made incredible advancement from these difficulties they're in these life-threatening situations. And if you ask any devotee who's been in life-threatening situations, like in Chechnya or Georgia or Sukhumi or any of these places where people have actually died, devotees have died serving Krishna, you'll hear the same thing again, that I made more advancement, I became more of a devotee, I understood more about Krishna consciousness. I became more dedicated to Krishna and my spiritual master. I understood better the books and the teachings of the acharyas by being in that situation than any other time in my life. And that's actually the case. When you have to depend on Krishna because of austerity, because all the material cushions and crutches are stripped away from you, then you make advancement like anything. You really advance in Krishna consciousness. I think that was a fair statement on behalf of several people. At least I can say that the hardest times were the best times. Anyway, we better stop. It's 9:20 now. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.